is O'Connor versus Kearney Junction LLC. Mr. Simpson, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Okay, please the court and opposing counsel. My name is Luke Simpson. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Ross, Schroeder & George, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Kearney Junction LLC. This case involves a commercial lease, a lease that contained an option to purchase. Paragraph 28 of the lease describes that option, and the option is subject to and conditional upon the full and faithful performance of all of lessee's duties and obligations under the lease. Now, as you may expect, there was a breach during this lease, okay? In May 1st, 2009, and for 35 consecutive months thereafter, the tenant paid the wrong amount of rent, okay?
Help me with the facts on that a little bit. Was okay. The tenant that discovered this?
There is some dispute as to who discovered it. The appellant claims we did. The appellee claims they did. I'm not sure it's especially relevant. It was discovered. The parties agreed that the back rent would be paid, and it was paid over 35 or over four payments, and the lease continued. So regardless of who discovered it, it was discovered. It was cured, and the lease continued. Okay. Then on October 8, 2013, the appellee sent notice that they were exercising the option. When the appellant got that exercise of option, the $50,000, he said, well, wait a minute. This lease has as condition precedent full and faithful performance of all conditions of the lease, and you had this breach. So they returned the notice of exercise and the $50,000 and said, because of this breach, you don't have an option. That went over well, as you can expect, and so a lawsuit is eventually brought. And the two causes of action are initially pled: declaratory judgment and specific performance, asking the court to enforce the lease.
Is there anything separate about the declaratory judgment, or is it simply surplusage to the specific performance cause of action?
They're related, Your Honor. Find that there is an option, that it was validly exercised, and then enforced.
What about the third cause of action? Is that a separate cause of action, or is that just a claim for additional damages for specific performance?
It was pled as an amendment to the original complaint at a later date. It was brought as a separate cause, but it is related to the specific performance and declaratory action. They are related.
Okay.
And so after the case is filed, the parties are negotiating. In approximately October 2014, the appellant says, okay, let's do this. We're going to allow you to exercise the option. We send an email to the opposing counsel to that effect, and we get a response that says, great, here's our appraiser. Let's put the litigation on hold until such time as we can determine the price. Now, we got that email, and we said, well, wait a minute. If you're claiming that you have this option, then there either is an option or there's not. But if there's an option, then both parties are parties to that contract, and the terms are what they are. They're still out in the lease and the option. And so the price should be irrelevant. And so at that time, we filed a motion asking the court to determine that there was an option, that it had been exercised, and asking the court to order both parties to specifically perform pursuant to the lease. It was treated as a motion for summary judgment, and that's how we got the February 17th, 2015 order that I'll call the summary judgment order.
And did you draft, on behalf of your client and for the court, did you draft that order for the court?
Yes, we did.
So it included language that you wanted?
Yes, it did.
Right. Was it essentially a judicial admission of the right to exercise the option?
It was a stipulation to the parties. I don't know that it's based on any findings of fact, and I would argue that it's not based on any findings of fact. It was an agreement between the parties. We offered only one piece of evidence, and that was the only evidence that was heard at that
counsel.
Time. Yes.
Follow up to that question, though, under 1B, it specifically says plaintiffs have duly exercised the option to purchase. How is that not binding?
Well, I think it is binding. But I don't think there's a finding of wrongdoing contained within that. Again, it was a stipulation between the parties.
No, but it's your contention that the default remains in place therefore you have a defense.
Right.
But if you, if there's a judicial finding and it's part of the order that the plaintiffs have duly exercised the option, doesn't that defeat your argument?
I would argue not, Your Honor. And in hindsight, maybe we would have changed the language. But
can you tell me why you believe that?
Well, because, again, it was based on a stipulation between the parties. And the order was based on one piece of evidence. It was the affidavit of John Abeglin, who was a principal for the appellant. In that affidavit, he recites the case, he describes the breach, and he says, notwithstanding that breach, we have decided to allow the appellee to exercise the option. That was the only evidence received by the court, and so I don't believe there's any...
Is that a waiver?
A waiver of what, Your
Honor? The condition, quote, condition precedent.
Not as to the damages claim, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
In a negligence case, if a defendant admitted negligence, would we then permit them to deny negligence for purposes of damages?
No, Your Honor, but I'm not sure the cases are comparable. We didn't admit wrongdoing in this case. Without wrongdoing, there'd be no damages.
For an option to exist, didn't the condition precedent have to be exist?
Not if it was based on a stipulation between the parties. I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So is that a modification?
It could be argued as such. Yeah, I believe that would be appropriate.
And assuming it was a modification, what does that do? Doesn't that dispose of the original condition?
No, Your Honor. I believe the summary judgment in this case, this February 17th order, goes to the first two causes of action. Our affirmative defense was pled and remained for the third cause of action, the damages. So I believe we retained our affirmative defense in that regard.
So that's going back. You get to keep it for one purpose, but you lose it for another?
And that, I would argue, is the agreement between the parties, Your Honor.
And that goes back to my question about, is it really a separate claim, or is it just part of the relief for specific performance? And if it's the latter, how do you divide the claim in that fashion?
I don't know that I have a good answer for you, except that that was the agreement between the parties. I see what you're saying, that it is attached, if you will, to the specific performance. But I believe the stipulation between the parties allowed for that.
So your stipulation, doesn't necessarily have to be consistent throughout?
Not necessarily. The stipulation was what it was, and it is embodied in the order, and I don't think we should be reading anything besides what is in the order.
Wasn't the order based on a motion that you drafted and filed?
Yes, and in support of that, we offered the affidavit which described the breach and said notwithstanding, we decided to allow them to exercise the option.
Counsel, you've talked about a stipulation. Does that stipulation appear in our record anywhere?
Well, no, I suppose it probably wouldn't. The affidavit of John Abeglin obviously will. Our motion obviously will. And I believe the judge describes at the hearing that there was no objection from opposing counsel to the proposed order or to the motion. And it was his order was based on stipulation of the parties. So the order itself is, I think, what you're going to be stuck looking at together with the motion and affidavit. Okay. In Nebraska, options need to be strictly construed and not extended beyond the provisions thereof. That's right, v. Barclay, 151, Nebraska 94. A court of equity, you've also decided, is bound by the contract as the parties have made it and has no authority to substitute another or different agreement. In this case, we're stuck with the full and faithful performance. Anything besides that is rewriting the contract, if you will. So the appellee is likely going to argue that, you know, substantial performance is good enough. Substantial performance isn't good enough. The parties agreed, negotiated, that full and faithful performance of all the duties and obligations was the condition precedent, and that's what we're stuck with, Your Honor. We assigned three assignments of error to the trial judge's order on damages. First being that the appellees had duly exercised their option as a matter of right. We believe that was not found in the summary judgment order, that that's an extension of that order and is something outside of it. Further, the trial judge says, well, the law of the case says you're prohibited from arguing this affirmative defense. Well, in order to have the law of the case doctrine, we would have an opportunity and an incentive to appeal the summary judgment ruling. And although we had the opportunity, likely, we didn't have an incentive. There was no finding of wrongdoing in that.
Do you think that was an appealable order?
I believe that's possible, Your Honor, yes.
On what theory?
That it affected a substantial right.
But it wasn't a special proceeding. It was an action, wasn't it?
Right, it was. It disposed of two of the causes of action.
So, multiple claims?
I'm not sure it was, and perhaps we didn't have an opportunity. But even if we did, we didn't have the incentive to appeal.
Assuming you didn't have the opportunity to appeal, which would help your law of the case argument, why wouldn't judicial estoppel apply, given the position that you took in the motion and the order?
Well, I think, again, that's an extension of the summary judgment order that isn't found.
That's what it says, and we're stuck with that.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bach, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. How are you this morning?
Very good.
May it please the court, Your Honors, opposing counsel. My name is Aaron Bach. I'm appearing this morning on behalf of the appellees in this proceeding, Raymond and Jennifer O'Connor. Contrary to what Mr. Simpson has indicated, this matter was a resolution upon a commercial lease wherein the appellees attempted to resolve this matter before it mushroomed into a cause of action for damages. The appellees exercised the option to purchase by giving the proper notice, submitting the proper funds in consideration of that. And then, about a month later, receive a rejection letter from counsel for the appellants saying, you don't have the right to exercise this option, blah, blah, blah. So we all get together in December to talk about this. This appears in the record. And no resolution occurs. Ultimately, there's an exchange back and forth of emails saying, okay, can we resolve it one way or another? Finally, we say back in an email, okay, let's just proceed in accordance with the exercise of the option. That's our proposal. They gave back a counter for a number. And we said, let's go ahead and have the appraisers go out and proceed in accordance with the option. That does not occur. We wait from the appellee standpoint. In March of 2014, the lease is going to expire May 1st, 2014. We're not getting any progress. So that's when the action is filed for declaratory judgment and specific performance. At that point in time, there was no damage. The option could have occurred, could have been exercised, the appraisals could have been completed, the closing could have occurred on May 1st. So subsequent to that time, as Mr. Simpson's indicated, in October, finally, they accede. They say, okay, let's go ahead and proceed. So we had scheduled a pretrial conference in November. In that, I requested on behalf of the appellees the ability to file the third cause of action because that was a supplement to the specific performance. We now have damages.
So conceptually, isn't it subsumed within the second cause of action?
It is, Your Honor. But to clarify where we were coming from the standpoint of where they were at with a specific performance, we filed it alleging certain damages were accrued. And we just specified. So it is one in the same.
How were the damages computed? You said that if you exercised the option prior to the expiration of the lease, then there wouldn't be any damages. Were the damages then for the rental value of the property subsequent to May 1st?
That's exactly what it was, Your Honor.
Who had the use of the building at that time?
They had the continued use. It was the Slumberland was the tenant. There was a tenant in it.
Okay.
We were one of the owners.
And they were getting the rent from Slumberland all the time this was going on.
They were getting the rent from
Slumberland. Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Right. And that was about $15,000 a month.
Yeah, thanks.
There were damages, that there were obligations that under the lease, we recognized that. And the court recognized that in saying there were taxes that were paid that would have been our responsibility had we gotten it on May 1st. There were insurance that was paid. That would have been our responsibility.
Opposing counsel suggests that perhaps, or at least agreed with me, that perhaps that order was a modification of the option. Do you agree?
Well, what that order was an admission that we had a right to do it, Your Honor. We had a right to proceed. It was substantially performed. Mr. Beglin says, yeah, everything was fine. We were good. The rent was cool. It was fine when the exercise was off, when the option was exercised. Rent was current as of November 2012.
Was it critical to say it was cool when it could have been exercised, and then that was when you would have arguably taken over?
Well,
is when part of the stipulation?
No, there's nothing in that stipulation about that. It says that we had the right to exercise, and we validly exercised that. That's what it says. And it wasn't a stipulation. It was a motion. We didn't stipulate to anything. We didn't offer anything as evidence in opposing it. The fact of the matter is, why would I oppose something that says we had a right to exercise the option, and we validly exercised the option? We had an option.
When?
That was in the December hearing.
No, I meant when was the option exercised, or was it exercised in theory?
The option was exercised already in October 2013.
Thank you.
And we sat and waited, trying to negotiate, until March of 2014, when this action was filed as specific performance and a declaratory judgment, because they were saying we didn't have an option, so we wanted a declaration. That was the reason it was filed. We proceeded forward. And it's an admission in the record. They're trying to get both sides. We admit, but no, we're not.
What about the applicability of the law of the case doctrine? Do you think that summary judgment order was appealable?
From the standpoint they asked for it, no. Was it appealable to me? I don't think so. And why would I appeal it? As the judge's comments in his order says.
So what does that do to the law of the case doctrine?
That is the law of the case. That was the decision. That was the order of the court. That controls.
Could the trial judge have changed his mind?
I believe not, Your Honor.
And what authority do you have for that proposition?
Because there are ample cases that at all stages of the case, if there is a decision, that binds the case, binds the judge in his subsequent determination. And that's what the order of the judge came down. Judge Young said this is.
So you think it was not an interlocutory order?
I think it was not it was an interlocutory order that couldn't be appealed. However, they admitted it. It's an admission. It's a binding admission. And the court said, well, fine, if that's what you want to be bound by, then you are.
So isn't your argument that really that what happened was a judicial admission, not law of the case?
It's both, Your Honor, because the judge made a determination that became the law of the case. But they admitted in their motion exactly what was the issue for the specific performance and for the declaratory judgment.
Do you have any authority for the proposition that the law of the case doctrine applies without an appealable order or an appeal?
There are ample cases that discuss this that the Supreme Court has decided, that talk about the law of the case, that indicate that at all elements of the case, and it's after the fact because it's after the appeal occurs. There is no interlocutory proceeding, but it looks back at orders. They look back at orders, and they're recited in my brief.
Okay.
They are. What we have here is a situation that the O'Connors went forward in good faith trying to get this matter closed. We gave every option for them to reconsider. That's why the action was filed as the declaratory judgment and the specific performance. Instead, they continued to hold us off. They received $135,000 in excess of what they would have been entitled to by the delay. And as a result, we are requesting that we receive what we should have received had the option included and had the closing occurred on May 1st, 2014, as it easily could have. That did not happen. Therefore, we're just requesting that the court recognize what we would have gotten had the specific performance occurred. That's all that we want. We would ask that the court reaffirm the decision of Judge Young in this proceeding and enter a judgment accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go to the next case of the day, which is Janice M. Henriksen, Inc. versus Messer Smith.